Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our first inaugural podcast for In the Black. We're hoping that this format will be able to pump out content a little bit more regularly. Been on a hiatus for a little while, but we wanted to come back, and with some things changing in the past year, especially with rising inflation, we wanted to get on and give our thoughts. Once again, I'm Mike here with Troy. And as you guys know, and as you guys can probably see at the gas pumps, at the grocery store, pretty much anywhere, that inflation is rising at a fast rate. Pretty much so, if you want to go back and look, right as the pandemic hit and everything shut down and everything went into lockdowns and people were working from home, the economy was sinking down the toilet. And what the Fed's response was, and when I say the Fed, I mean the Federal Reserve, because that in itself is a mystery to most. It's hard to explain, but the Fed is actually a quasi-government entity. It's not fully government. It's really made up by the central banks. So it's like a private government weird hybrid. But they're the ones who are responsible for creating the money and putting it into circulation. So a lot of people think it's the actual federal government, like Congress. No, it's actually the Fed who really sets that monetary policy about how much money gets put into circulation. They get to set the interest rates, asset purchases from the Fed. And they use these methods to control inflation, to increase spending, to spur on investments. And they do that by controlling the money supply. So as the Fed is looking at U.S. economy going down the drain, which in turn affects pretty much every other economy because everything is pegged to the dollar. Even a lot of other currencies are pegged to the dollar. Everything, you know, the dollar is the, for lack of a better term, world reserve. They went into action. The action they chose was to pretty much take interest rates to close to as zero as you possibly could, which means they were printing out money left and right. Matter of fact, 40% of the money that's in existence today was printed in the last 2 years. And when we say print, I don't literally mean they got out of, you know, we're printing physical dollars, but they're creating zeros on the back of balances and sending those out. And what they do is they lend that money out to banks. And that money gets put into circulation, into the economy. And when the Fed pretty much drops interest rates, you notice that pretty much all interest rates for everything drops. So you'll notice that the savings account that you had, that interest rate dropped. If you were in a high yield savings account, that interest dropped. But also you notice if you're out shopping for a mortgage, looking for a new house, those interest rates plummet as well. Because when the Fed lowers interest to where it's almost free to borrow for these banks to borrow money, then that interest kind of gets passed along to you. So, you know, we went through about 2 years of this record low interest being handed out by the Fed. The Fed was also purchasing bank bonds and other assets and adding it to its own balance sheet, further incentivizing the free movement of cash flow throughout the economy, allowing interest to stay super, really artificially low. The consequence of this is inflation started to rise. And inflation is pretty much just the, as it sounds, the inflated prices. You'll notice that in the inflated price of assets it does, but that's just because the value of the dollar has gone down, right? So when a dollar, let's say last year, $1 used to be, you know, was worth $1. This year, that $1 is now worth, you know, roughly 93 cents because inflation, from what they say, is 6.8%. And that's highly debatable because the way they come up with that number is they essentially take a basket of goods, you know, a carton of milk, egg, you know, cheese, this kind of bread, and they kind of handpick which basket of goods they're going to use and see how much that price increased year over year. That's essentially how they came up with that 6.8%. Now, if you go and look at gas prices, that's way up higher than 6.8%. If you go look at the used car market, that's, you know, that's astronomically high, right? So you have all these other, you know, real life tangible things that you kind of see with your own eyes and know that it's actually higher than 6.8%. So because of that, now the Fed has to take an aggressive approach to, you know, prevent further inflation, prevent possible hyperinflation, which is what you see in, like, you hear about Zimbabwe, where, you know, a loaf of bread costs $1 million. Venezuela, what's happening actually now in Turkey to the Turkish lira. You see that the value of their currency has plummeted because of inflation. They call it hyperinflation, where it's becoming worthless. You know, you're pretty much have to have wheelbarrows of money to do any kind of transaction. So the Fed stepped in and said last year in December that they were going to tighten their monetary policy, they were going to raise rates, and they were going to stop their asset purchasing and start offloading some of the assets they have been having on their balance sheet. So when they did that, essentially sent a shockwave through the market. And what you're going to start noticing this year, and already we're starting to notice, you're going to start seeing interest rates rise. Which, and the reason behind that is to slow inflation, you need to make money more costly to borrow. And when money's more costly to borrow, it's going to be less free flowing, right? You want to have more people holding on to it and less people just buying up, frivolous assets. That's why you see, like I said, last year you see the prices, pretty much anything, boats, cars, RVs, everything was through the roof because people were just spending money left and right because it was cheap to borrow. Now that's going to get more expensive to borrow, you're going to see that slow down a lot. And they're trying to rein in that inflation. The Fed actually targets a 2% inflation every year. You know, according to economics, actually 2% inflation is supposed to be healthy for any good growing economy. But, you know, we clearly overshot that. So now that we're going into this year of tightening the monetary policy, Jerome Powell, who was renominated by Joe Biden as the Fed chair, pretty much has stated that, you know, the Fed is going to take an aggressive approach with 3 to 4 rate hikes this year, 3 to 4 next year, and then maybe one more in 2023. So as you're going to see, as time goes on, right now, the market is trying to figure out, you know, how that's going to impact itself. And you're seeing that with in the stock market, you're seeing, you know, certain stocks are doing really well with this news. So if you're in the banking sector, those banks are doing well because if higher interest rates means, you know, more interest, which means more money they collect. So you're seeing banking stocks doing particularly well, but you're seeing what you're going to see now after record highs in the NASDAQ, which is a index, you know, primarily made up of tech stocks. That was at all-time highs, breaking and breaking all-time highs, running super, to be honest, super hot. Right, the NASDAQ is a little overvalued. I'd say a lot overvalued. Because everything was, when you have cheap interest rates, cheap money to borrow, cheap money flowing through and out, and people can put more money into riskier companies, riskier tech innovative companies and growth companies who don't have a lot of earnings yet, right? But the basis of investing in those companies is that you think over time in the future, they're going to become like the next Tesla, if you will. They're going to go and create some kind of innovative technology or innovative product that's really going to shock the space, and that the money that you're paying in now is going to be a good deal, because as the company grows, its earnings, of course, are going to grow over time. You think those earnings will grow exponentially. So you're investing now, even though you know you're paying more than what the company is worth on paper. So all the NASDAQ is made up of tech heavy companies. You have a lot of growth stocks, small. Those are, you think of growth stock, you think of like maybe your Lucids, your Neos, DraftKings, those smaller companies are really just starting to make it on the scene. They all got impacted heavily based off this news because money's going to get stricter, tighter, more interest to borrow. You're going to have a lot of these bigger investment companies, hedge fund, VC companies be a lot more stringent on where they invest their money. So they're not going to invest as liberally. So you're going to see, we're seeing the prices of these, especially growth stocks and tech stocks, crash dramatically. You're seeing 30, 40, 50% corrections, you know, in the past 3 weeks, past month, in a lot of these growth stocks. And you look at the NASDAQ just over the past week, where the Fed minutes actually got released this week, I believe it was on Tuesday, where they kind of, you know, people knew that they were going to raise rates and coming into the year, but they didn't know that they want to taper off the asset purchasing as well. So what that ended up doing was sent the market to a bigger shot, because when you taper off the asset purchasing, now also it's like an accelerant on raising the interest rates. So that shocked the market even further. So now we're looking at the NASDAQ down a whopping 4.44% in the first week of the year, which is startling a lot of investors. I know I lost a lot of money. Personally, because I'm a tech heavy when I invest my money. And that's causing a lot of people to reevaluate their portfolios. Some of the investment groups that I'm in, you know, people are seeing huge losses, me and myself as well, because, you know, we didn't expect the rotation out of tech and growth to be so violent and so fast. So now looking forward, looking ahead, you're looking at more what we call value stocks, stocks that generally have a low PE ratio, which is profits to earning ratio, which kind of gives you a little idea of how much money a stock is earning relative to its price. So you're looking at maybe Coca-Cola, you're looking at, as an example of value stocks, maybe Johnson & Johnson. Some of these older, more traditional brands, usually they're the dividend paying stocks too, that are really slow in growth, but they don't drop in price, right? They're pretty steady. They're slow in growth and they're pretty much consumer staples where you know that your money's going to be safe there, right? You're hedging off that, okay, I don't think these consumer, because you know, people are going to still buy Coke products, people are still buy Pepsi products. You know, people are still going to use, go to the grocery store and get certain products off the shelf that Johnson & Johnson may provide or Procter & Gamble. Energy stocks tend to do okay in this market because people still got to pay their light bill, people still got to pay their gas bill and things like that. So we're looking at a rotation of the money. But, you know, as I was talking to actually Troy about this the other day, all this money that's been bleeding out this market, the crypto market too, the crypto market, you look at that, that's actually highly correlated right now to the NASDAQ in terms of tech, because crypto is tech. You look at the crypto market, tanked hard as well. Bitcoin down, I think at this recording around 41.9, I believe. Far off its all-time high of 69,000. But you're looking at all this money moving out, right, and selling out of these stocks, right? And we, as I just had said earlier, that you look at 40% of the money in existence was printed in the last 2 years. It's like, where is all this money going, right? A lot of it's sitting on the sidelines in cash, right? Because people are not sure where to invest it. A lot of these bigger hedge fund banks are trying to figure out, okay, let me pull my money out until I can figure out what's going on with this market. So while I think this crash, I use crash in quotation because it's technically not a crash, but this huge downtrend, I'll say a crash in the growth stocks, but this downtrend in the NASDAQ, bigger tech stocks, you know, the question is how long is it going to last? You know, are people going to continue to pull money out? Are they going to this week come up, you know, turn around and say, okay, maybe I overreact a little bit. You know, Apple's still Apple, you know, Microsoft's still Microsoft. These companies are going to continue to grow. Let me reinvest it, because even as the Fed is aggressively attacking the inflation problem, you know, your money's still losing value if it's just sitting there, not being invested in anything. So the question is, how long is it going to take for some of this money to rotate back into the growth sector, back into the tech stocks? That's what you as a investor, as a, you know, as quote unquote, they call us retail investors, your individual investors have to figure out what your risk tolerance is. Are you going to, you know, if you're investing a lot of tech plays, are you going to sell now, possibly at a loss, and try to rotate into some value stocks? Or are you going to ride the wave and see what happens and, you know, wait for the money to rotate back in, which could be next week, next month, next year, we don't know, right? And you're willing to look at those losses in your account for that long. You know, there's a lot of psychology in investing, and there is no right or wrong approach. You know, history dictates the right and wrong approaches, but in terms of right now, there are no right or wrong approaches, because, you know, the biggest part of investing is the unknown. You don't know what to do. And like I said, as me and Troy were talking, all this extra cash that's in circulation, it has to have somewhere to go. You know, it's not just going to sit on the sidelines. As Ray Dalio says, for you guys who don't know who Ray Dalio is, he's the founder and head of the largest hedge fund in the world. He was quoted recently saying cash is trash. He says he hates holding cash. It's constantly losing its value at an elevated pace at this point. And a lot of investors, you know, listen to him. So the thing is to figure out where's the next section that all this money is going to rotate into. And, you know, if we had a crystal ball, we'd all be rich. But that's, you know, that's the question, Troy.
That's excellent analysis there, Michael. But what it comes down to it is when we talk about inflation, we talk about each individual dollar we have being worth less. In the simplest terms, we can go back in time and talk about things when, you know, a gallon of gas was 10 cents. There are parts of the country is going to be looking at $4 here soon. And the reality is, I don't think we're going backwards. We've seen price spikes before due to supply chain issues, but inflation is different. Inflation is essentially permanent. I cannot think of, I don't know about you, Mike, a time in which this goes backwards, right? It's the never-ending march forward that we are accelerating. You touched on that 6.8% earlier. The reality is they're looking at outdated metrics to determine that. And you hit that nail on the head. People want to be able to buy cars because they need transportation. People want to be able to buy homes so they can reach that American dream and become first-time homeowners. And the cost of borrowing is insane. People need to be able to put fuel in their cars once they buy them. And the price of gas is going up with no end in sight. And before we even get into the value of the ability to borrow money to get a home or a car, the actual price of the home and cars are going up. Even what we've seen here in North Texas, where we're based, is insane. Just in the last 1 year, let alone if you take a look at a nice 3 to 5 year span, the prices are going up with no end in sight. And normally, you know, inflation comes from having more money in the market, but you made an excellent point about cash on the sidelines. It's huge. Institutional investors, deep pockets of old money that has the cash on the sideline. The wages are not going up for most. I don't know about you, Mike, but we're negotiating these raises and things of that nature as we look towards new jobs, man. And it's just our money, quite frankly, is not buying the same thing that it used to or what it even should. That is a tough sell for people. So when we talk about things like massive government spending programs and massive money printing from the Fed, qualitative easing and the things that have happened in the past to get us through different economic issues and collapses, we're seeing a resurgence in the coronavirus. So it remains to be seen if that will have another negative impact on the market. Mike, do you remember when the Fed spent $1 trillion to prop up the market and essentially disappeared the next day? You know, like, well, not the next day, but like within a few weeks. This is a tough sell for, you know, we're in our mid to early 30s. I'm going to hang on to that early, by the way. But we're in our mid 30s. And for all those coming up behind us and even those around and above us, it is a tough sell to watch the market print money out of thin air when it comes to, we had an interesting conversation the other day, Mike, when it comes to the value of things like, you know, stock and company, and seeing money essentially created, but the idea that it's never destroyed. And if that is the case, is there anything that could even bring inflation within reason? We're seeing, even by the outdated metrics, inflation rising at, you know, the estimated 6.8%. That's the highest since 82. You know, so we're well before we were born. So this is definitely an enormous problem that seems to have no end in sight. And if you aren't aggressively investing your money, I used to encourage people to simply invest reasonably, you know, follow that S&P 500, which is still doing very well no matter what. But it feels almost, Mike, like if we're not aggressively investing our money, we're just behind the eight ball.
Yeah, you're right. Like I said, if your money is just sitting there in a bank account, it's just losing purchasing power. The American citizen is losing purchasing power at an incredible rate. Like I said, inflation is estimated, you know, from what the government says, at 6.8%. That's an astounding rate. If you think about it, going back to your wage example, if you don't get a raise of 6.8% or higher this year, you effectively make less money than you did last year. I don't think people think about it in that terms. That means you essentially got a pay cut, right? Because now your money does not go as further as it did before. You can purchase less, and your position, your economical status in this country has gone down. And, you know, so sometimes people get, they might get a 3 or 4% raise and be celebrating. You're still poorer than you were last year. People have to think in terms of what these numbers mean and how they affect their lives. Like you mentioned earlier about real estate. If you want to go and purchase a house, just being in this North Texas area, North Dallas area, I've seen the housing prices skyrocket. I've seen the value of my house, thankfully, go up as well. But I think about if I'm in the position where I want to purchase a house, I have to settle for a lot less. And I think, Troy, you mentioned it earlier that she's, if you notice, they're building a lot more townhomes instead of just regular single family homes. That's because Townhomes are cheaper. They're on smaller plots of land. They can build more of them, and they come at a smaller price, a lower price point. And you almost have to buy a townhome now. You know, if you're starting off with just your first home, if you're in your starter home, because the prices of single family homes have gone through the roof. It's really making it hard for people who don't have money invested. If you're just relying simply on your paycheck, if you're relying just simply on your retirement from work, that's not going to cut it. To be honest, you know, the Social Security, that's not even keeping up with inflation, right? So the money, the amount that Social Security increases, you know, if you were solely dependent on it, which most people thankfully aren't, but if you were, you'd be really, you know, you'd be asked out right now. Same thing. If you look at, you know, a lot of people relying on pensions and things, and people who are on a fixed income, they're really going to be hurting, right? And that's why it's important to invest outside of your company's retirement or your government's retirement plan, because who knows what the landscape is going to look like by the time you retire. Who knows? You know, in the year 2040, 2050, when people have already start retiring, you know, $1 million may not be a lot, right? So you might have $1 million saved up, but that might not be a lot. That might not be nowhere near enough to float you on for the rest of your life to be able to retire comfortably. You know, $2 million might not be enough. $5 million might not be enough. You have to take, like you say, if you look at the history of the United States and look at how bad the dollar has inflated, you know, you always hear about your parents say, oh, back in my day, you know, I used to be able to get, you know, a Hershey's candy bar for 5 cents. Well, you can't even get one for a dollar anymore, right? Think about that, right? The same product, same Hershey's bar, now it's cost well over a dollar to purchase when it used to cost 5 cents when your parents were younger. That's going to continue to go. So think about when you get to your parents' age, retirement age, how much is that Hershey bar going to cost then? $3, right? If a Hershey bar costs $3, what else? What does everything else cost, right? So you have to start thinking and getting aggressive with how you're going to invest your money, how you're going to, one thing, preserve the wealth you do have, and the second thing, accelerate that wealth, right? And I think investing, especially in the minority communities, is something that never gets discussed. And that's probably a topic in of itself. But right now is the perfect time with the advent of YouTube, the advent of Twitter, Instagram, so many social media platforms where you can follow people, right? And you can start opening that area that you don't know and start learning and learning to get your feet wet. One guy I actually listened to, he says the hardest investment you make is your first one, right? Because it's scary. He's saying, you're telling me that if I take my hard-earned money and I put it into something, I may lose some of it. I may lose all of it. Yes, that's the reason for investing. You get rewarded for your risk. If it was a guarantee, it wouldn't be an investment. So you have to be able to learn what to invest in, and B, you know, you need to, it's actually an ever-going journey of learning your investment style, what your risk tolerance is, how comfortable you are. If you're very risk averse, maybe investing into crypto is not for you. Maybe you just want to stick with a regular old S&P style index like the VOO, which is the Vanguard's index that tracks S&P with very low fees. And that may be it for you. And that's totally fine. Maybe you're on the riskier side and you want to go after high growth and tech stocks. Well, you know, you're going to be riding the lightning and you're going to do it when the market's really up, you're going to be doing very well. But when the market goes down, slightly, you're going to be feeling the pain. But those things you learn over time. And it's best to get those lessons out the way while you're younger versus when you're older, because you have, you know, time in the market is better than timing in the market. You have time to recover and kind of develop your strategy and your style and what you want to do. And one thing about investing, I'd say, is like I say, just keep on learning. So it's a ever-going journey. I can tell just for me and Troy and how much we've learned over the past few years of investing, from really starting off with minimal knowledge to where we're at now, we're still growing. And people tend to go off. Troy really likes the dividend stocks. That's something that really appeals to him. You know, me, I'm not that I'm anti-dividend stocks, but I'm more geared towards, you know, tech plays and, you know, high stocks with high growth potential. Right. But you learn that over time. You learn that from being in the market and playing the game, essentially. But if you don't play the game, you stay on the sidelines, you'll get left on the sidelines. And my biggest fear is when you get older, you look around, you're saying, I barely have enough, or I just have enough to cover, you know, you know, my living expenses when I'm older. But the goal isn't just to cover your living expenses while you're older. The goal is to build generational wealth. The goal is actually to leave something behind to your kids, and maybe if you don't have kids, to your nephews and your nieces, you know, to your siblings, possibly. Goal is that when they go and put you in the ground, you're leaving behind something that carries the next generation forward. And that's something that, once again, is not really preached on too heavily in our community. And that's something that you really got to think of. You need to look at the macro picture and not just, you know, what's it doing for me right now? You know, maybe you can't go on that extra vacation. Maybe you can't, you know, buy that new pair of Yeezys. You know, maybe you can't get that new car because now you're allocating some of your money, your cash flow into investing. But if you look at the macro picture, you zoom out, look at the impact it's going to not only have on your life in the future, but also the life of, you know, the life of your loved ones, you know, it's definitely well worth the investment. So you need to be staying up to date on things that are happening in the market, because this stuff affects us. When they say inflation, that affects you. You know, that affects your purchasing power. That affects how you're able to move in this market. So you need to be up to date on these type of things, Troy.
Absolutely. And in closing, hopefully for those of you guys who have been rocking with us with the YouTube videos and the live streams, we are on YouTube in the Black. You know, we've been trying to push the idea and importance of investing, that it is accessible to every single person. And it does not require, especially with today's day and age, the power of the phone in your hands, the ability to Google the answer to nearly any question, and a multitude of resources, of which we hopefully would be honored to become one for you guys. It's important to do so. And that goes from investing in mutual funds, index funds. What is the stock market? We have videos on all those things. The importance of simply having life insurance, because we are all going to leave this world one day. And the importance of doing those things for your family, whether you have children or not, a spouse or not, parents, siblings, loved ones, and anyone you care for that you wish to leave something behind, it is important, because inflation is robbing us of the value of our dollars, the value of money. The jobs that salary, whatever salary you thought was acceptable 10 years ago, now is way behind the eight ball. And as you continue, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. So it is critical that we make smart financial decisions and invest our money intelligently and take advantage of different trends in the markets, the buying during the dips, being having cash on hand so that if anything goes down the market, we can buy and see those returns. Seriously, guys, it is important. And we can't state that enough. And hopefully, as we begin this foray into adding pods to the In the Black brand, you guys will get continue to check us out. Listen, please be sure to like, follow, subscribe. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. And we, of course, are on YouTube. And we will continue to have pods coming on out and additional content in the future. And we appreciate all you guys who have followed us on this journey. Thank you guys very much. And may we always remain in the Black.